We have Paddy Colovan in studio with us, and you're invited to join him on a hilariously insightful journey through the history of partition and the Ireland of the future. I can't believe it's not Ireland. It's in the Ballot Arts Centre, Ballybuffet, on the 18th of July. You love playing up here, Paddy, don't you?
I absolutely love playing up here. As you know, I got a house in Gortahorik. So I came up here for my parents in Galway this morning, 7 a.m.
What was that journey like for you?
It was marvellous till I hit Ballybuffet.
Right.
Well, Sligo, as always, should be. And the whole road between... basically, Sligo and Mayo should be got rid of entirely.
Yes,
I think Henry Grattan was the last guy that had anything to do with that road. But the Donegal roads are magnificent. Got to Ballybuffet, bit of roadworks, fine. And then I experienced for the very first time, Greg, the traffic light at the roundabouts of Letterkenny. Look, all I'm saying now, someone outside told me, no, it's actually improved the traffic. So
who's that person?
I don't know, but all I know is that
dragged in here.
All I'm saying is that in the future, United Ireland, I'm predicting we will not have traffic lights at roundabouts, because the idea of a traffic light at a roundabout defeats the idea of a roundabout. Am I wrong?
It seems strange, doesn't it? It's like adding spurs onto wheels and things.
Yes, something like that.
It's perfect.
But if it's working, it's working, Greg. What can I say? It's the Donegal logic. I have no idea.
It's a lot of people don't believe it's working. We spent 15 odd million on that road. Did you notice as you come in the two lanes?
Yeah.
Where would an ambulance fire engine go?
Oh dear. Okay.
Do you know what I'm saying? I didn't. And this is how we do things. So apparently there's not an issue with it, right? Because it's fine. But then when the rally was on and the town was busy, they actually dedicated a separate road altogether for emergency vehicles.
Very good. Okay.
So for that 3 days, we required a separate road for emergency vehicles. But for the rest of the year, and it's bumper to bumper out to the Clannery, we don't need that kind of... It's crazy.
I promise you in 2032, Greg, this will all change.
Okay. Right. Well, listen, this is why we are going to have to go to, I can't believe it's not Ireland, in the Ballot Arts Centre. So what's the premise of this show?
The premise was I'd done my shows, The Murder of Michael Collins and The Murder of Wolf Tone, and they were about the past and a kind of an unjust past. But as I was bringing Wolf Tone's story through the north last summer, it was amazing to me. It was very like what your previous speaker was talking about before the news, this kind of strange history where Catholics and Protestants actually fought on the same side in 1798. And a lot of Protestant and Presbyterian people were coming to my Wolf Tone show, even in predominantly Republican or Catholic areas. I think people are really interested in that history. And I just found this kind of positivity on the ground that if you listen to Stephen Nolan or you look to Twitter from the north, you would find this terribly disagreeable thing. It would feel like 1991. But on the ground every day, people were getting on, learning their 1798 history and thinking about the future. Because obviously with Brexit, there's a lot of people in the north now thinking, look, what's the better future? So I decided to put a show together about the future. It's full of fun and full of humour, but I'd be as happy doing this in East Belfast as I would in West Belfast. It's a pay end to Protestants and Presbyterians who they changed their minds four times in Irish history, Greg. So I bring the show around that. I've got great songs and a lot of comedy and stuff. But you know, 1798, when Wolf Tone and the lads decided we needed a fairer society in Ireland. In 1834, when the Protestant and Presbyterian Church came together to fight against Home Rule and Rome Rule, they were right about that, by the way. That's what happened. So you know, they were right for the second time. Third time, 1913. When they go from being anti-home rule to wanting home rule for Ulster, which is fair enough. And then 2030, Saturday, June 1st, when a majority of people north and south vote for a united Ireland. And that's where we have this amazing coming together. And I bring the show from the story of partition right up to the future. And then I use AI imagery, comedy, music to bring you what this future Ireland's going to be like. It'll even have, would you believe, Greg? Trains in Donegal.
No, can't.
Oh, yes.
This is fantasy. Normally, you've got your finger on the pulse, but surely not.
No. Greenways are fantastic. I love greenways. But who thought that we would go from train travel to walking? I think we're going to bring back the natural progression of man to bringing trains back to Donegal. And I not only that, but I foresee a high-speed rail that goes all the way around Ireland, circling Ireland between Derry, Letterkenny, down to Sligo. And you get between
Sounds
cities
fantastic.
600 kilometres an hour. That's the speeds they've got up to in Spain. And you can get from any town or any city in Ireland in 15 minutes.
Paddy, we have a presidential election coming up shortly. Would you consider it?
I'm still too young, Greg.
So when you talk about this having an appeal for a broad audience, right?
Yeah.
So that's people of different religious backgrounds, political backgrounds. Do you have to design it that way, or if you actually look at history, it kind of lends itself to being sort of open to all audiences?
Well, I learned a lot doing my histories, especially of the United Irishmen, and just You know, I was thinking, especially with world conflicts today, you know, people are so on one side or the other. And I always found the greatest thing you can do is actually get into the mind of the person you traditionally feel is the enemy. And the more I looked at Protestants and Presbyterians and the Loyalist cause and the Unionist cause, I saw that many times it was the logical answer, not just for them, but for the whole country. And this isn't to besmirch or do down the Republican nationalist tradition, which I am from. But, you know, certainly when Republicanism and nationalism was tied to Catholicism, it scuppered it in a great way. Mm-hmm. And even before Republicanism came along, when the Catholics kept backing the Stuarts, even though the Stuarts kept letting them down, you know, and this Irish fascination with royalty, especially this Catholic fascination with royalty, which still happens, it just made me learn to get into the mind of the opposition, actually see their point of view. So the show comes at you from all point of views. It's going to annoy people in equal measure from both traditions, but it's also going to inspire people from both traditions.
But normal people can see that, the nuances and stuff. You know, we all work together, live together, and what have you, all from different backgrounds. And now we live in an island too where there are more than just two backgrounds, aren't there?
Yeah.
Or three. There are many,
well, there's many, but again, like, it's funny. Like, I've done a lot of this based on hard study as well. So even though there's a lot of fun in the show,
you'll be laughing. Well researched,
But I've done, you know, Brendan O'Leary, the Aaron's Project, he's interviewed extensively Unionists and what they want and what they don't want. And he found that in the South, it's much harder for people to give up things like the tricolour, the anthem, rejoining the Commonwealth. I even propose the idea that we may have to, because our presidential elections, as you mentioned, are so horrific. They're so horrific and awful that we can only have them every 7 years. We might have to go back to the idea of an Irish king or queen. But it's an idea. Even though I'm a Republican, I would actually rather have a kind of powerless, symbolic royal family than ever go through another Irish presidential election where the entire cast of the Dragon's Den put themselves forward.
I can't remember. There's a word for accepting the worst of two bad things. I can't remember what the word is, but it sounds like that's the road you're going down.
Exactly.
But before we talk more about the show, you just mentioned there about division and how divided we're getting. And I don't know if it's... It worries me too, because Twitter now is really a place where either you go with one point of view or two people with very different points of view go to argue. And you talk about sort of radio shows that are designed and come at it from one angle to agitate and what have you.
Yes.
And I think as you see the media and contributors lean more to one side, rather than saying, right, the future is broadcasting from a centre position, what happens is other commentators start popping up that are very much on the opposite. And we are heading into sort of an American-style system, I think, here.
I joke
that... Is that worrying?
Yeah, well, obviously as a younger man, I was far, you know, quite left, you know, and now I describe myself as far centrist.
Yes.
Because every time I look at a position I held 20 years ago and every time I look at the opposite position, I see that the extremes aren't working. And
it's a horseshoe, isn't it? The two extremes are quite close together.
People thrive in all this stuff, and it's even the way the traditions in the North and here mimic each other.
Yes.
When it comes to even marching bands and all the rest of those things, and, you know, they have their bonfires in July and the Republicans have it in August and all the rest of it. And what I'm seeing is, what are the things that unite us? And funny enough, those things do. So when we build our new parliament building in Athlone, for instance.
Oh, Athlone.
In Athlone, well, it has to be. How would you get Belfast and Dublin to agree where the capital will be? And what would Cork feel like? You know, if Cork had to go to Belfast, sure, they don't even know, they think Tipperary's Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, so you'd have it in Athlone and you have this beautiful circular parliament building, which I've used AI to construct. And of course, the only, again, what do we agree on as a shape for a building? On Greenon, the ancient circle. The ancient circle, which is the same as the circle that you see in the bonfire on the 12th of July. So we bring these things together. Our love for St. Patrick, he's a patron saint of both traditions. We have many different things we agree on. But one of the main things is the economy, that we need to get, you know, the Protestant idea was always pragmatic. The North in 1900 was Silicon Valley. It was the most successful economy in the world. But now, Southern Ireland is, and I think pragmatic people will go, well, what's better, to stick with Britain where we are, our
so
fortunes
doing,
are bad.
You're doing this thing again that you keep doing, aren't you? You're entertaining us with music, imagery, you know, media rich, the introduction of AI and comedy. But you're also talking about serious things. You're doing it again, aren't you? Where it's actually entertaining. entertaining, but you're learning something, and you're actually sort of. You know, even I think it was your last show, You know, reviewing what we know about history and how we choose to remember history and what suits us and what we choose to ignore. But this is obviously more future based.
Well, you see, well, also, yeah, but also people are saying, well, this won't be for decades and won't happen for a while. But we got to talk about it really quickly.
Yeah.
Because things change real quickly, as you know, Greg. But as well as that, like once the British government says, we're not funding it anymore.
Yeah.
Like literally, that's alarm bells, that's code red. And so we should be talking about a United Ireland straight away. Yeah. And we should be discussing, okay, what's wrong with the tricolour? Well, for me, it's identity politics. We're dividing the country into two communities, green and orange, with the white in between. And as you said, we're many different communities now.
Very different.
And in fact, you know, we need one symbol to get behind, one thing that all the people here, as Wolfe Tone said, Protestant, Catholic and dissenter under the common name of Irishman. And that includes everybody else who's here as well. And you see, that's why you need a new flag. You need a new anthem, because our anthems are always about killing and murdering and bombing and blowing up, and one person wins and the other person loses. And I'm trying to get us. Yes, I have turned into a hippie, Greg. You are right. Because having studied history as extensively as I have, having kind of seen it from one point of view, I now go, okay, that's done. We've got to leave that behind. And we now have to find a brand new place where we all get on very, very well on this island. Do you know what I mean? Another thing I feel that we, as you say, we're getting involved because of Twitter, because of the internet. We can turn on American news in the morning and know so much. I always find it funny that papers like the Irish Times have an American correspondent going, you don't need one there because I can turn on CNN or whatever else. And we're getting so involved in the rest of the world. And as Wolfe Tone said, when he invented neutrality, he said, peace with all the world is our object and our interest. Mm-hmm. So when we take one side in a conflict or another, when we do all of these things, we're getting involved in something that isn't really our business. But secondly, we've stopped focusing on what's right around us.
Yeah.
And I think you make the village right, you make the town right, you make the country right. And then, by all means, have an opinion about something else. But Ireland's what we've got to concentrate on. Mm. Our focus is all over the place at the moment, I think.
Yeah, and you know, like I've been saying this for the longest time on this programme, is really what will be decided, or if ever is a border poll, and you're of the view it's coming sooner than later. Mm. The issues that we will be voting on are really, well, where will hospital services be provided from?
Yes.
What are the tax implications? Mm. What will this do to our economy?
Mm.
What will we do with so many of the people in the north that are employed in the civil service? And so on. I mean, I'm not saying that will be solely, but if you're in Cork or Galway or anywhere further south of Sligo, effectively, I don't think you're going to be too involved in the politics of it.
No,
or maybe I'm wrong.
But also, I mean, when Fitzgerald, Gar Fitzgerald's son, came out with that kind of scary thing,
it was
going to cost $20 billion a year for 20 years. Yeah, but our budget for 5.5 million people at the moment is $110 billion.
Mm.
So we spend $20 billion per million people.
But it didn't account for it didn't account for the positives of a United Ireland.
Yeah, but we're spending $20 billion a year in the south on 1 million people, right? We'd be spending $20 billion on 2 million people.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're getting two for the price of one. As David McWilliams has said, it's actually a bargain to spend $20 billion. It's
a twofer.
Not only that, as Leo Varadkar said, and a great credit to him, he said, if it costs us 2-3% of GDP to have a United Ireland, can you imagine the goodwill, the success, the tourism, the investment, the potential? America just going, yes, here's, you know, we're going to put Google into Belfast. Yeah. We're going to put Google everywhere. Like, and like I say, if you build those things and use that Belfast engineering, that amazing Protestant engineering tradition, and Donegal, to get a fully cohesive transport system where it's 15 minutes from Derry to Sligo, or 5 minutes from Letterkenny to Derry.
The world will be our oyster.
The world is your oyster. And you're creating something like a Switzerland. And also, it's like there's a lot of fun throughout the thing. You know, we go from very serious questions like that to which Tato, Greg? You know Southern Tatoes.
It's only red and blue.
It's only red and blue.
You can stick the yellows.
Yeah, it's superior. But you see, when I say that in Belfast, there's almost a riot, and from nationalists. So you see, you have to be careful. And these are the things we have a look at. And that's why I'm using AI to envision these things. It's amazing. You put in something because everyone's scared of AI. And I'm going, yeah. But AI is just a tool, like the Gutenberg press. If you have a really good idea and you say, well, I'd like to see what a high-speed rail in Donegal would look like. And it gives it to you. And you're there. Yeah. And I'm a great believer in Beyoncé's ethos. If you can see it, you can be it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so all of these things are in the show, and I'm so glad to be part of the Errigal Festival again, because I haven't been for about 4 or 5 years since COVID. And I want to kind of bring this hopeful vision, because anyone who's come to see the show, they say they walk out in a high. Because it's funny enough, from hanging around with all these Presbyterians and Protestants, I've kind of turned into a bit of an evangelical preacher, you know?
Where's the capital? Sorry, it's not Athlone. That's where
it is Athlone, yes.
So the capital would be Athlone as well as the seats of power.
Yeah, seat of power, and yes, it would. And okay. it means you're equidistant from Belfast to Cork. You see, Leinster House is not a proper parliament building. Stormont is. Mm. And of course, they could argue, well, we're going to have the parliament here then, in a purpose-built place on its own grounds. And we're going to have to go, well, no, actually, because poor Corkonians couldn't make the
well,
6-hour train ride.
Well, Centre Parks. It's right smack bang in the middle of everything.
Centre Parks is all right, but we're on the Shannon. It's glorious. And Athlone needs a bit of a boost. Come on, Greg. But
What else do you talk about in it? Because, as I say, by the way, if you haven't seen one of Paddy's shows, you really are in for a treat in Ballybuffet on the 8th of July. I've sort 18th. Of been, 18th of July. I've been sort of throwing different things in here that aren't even really necessarily the subject of the show, because Paddy is just interested in his opinions on certain things as well. But before we go, I'll give you an opportunity, and I want you to sort of talk through the show sort of in a run, so to speak. But there's a funny line here. Unionist colony in the south discover the imperial joys of the Royal Dublin, which you referenced. Southerners discover the ancient landscapes of Ulster beyond the retail outlets of Newry and Titanic in Belfast. And there's like a real truth to that, if you know what I mean. Like, I'm probably going to go into the north. I mean, other than scooting around the border, and it's probably going to be to Belfast Zoo and back and see nothing else, really.
Yeah, I mean, people forget about the beaches of Derry. I'm always amazed that no one ever talks about the beaches of Derry. You say Derry in the south and they go, oh, Bogside, Bloody Sunday and...
Full shopping centre.
And that's it. And it's funny, you know, things like that are shocking to me. It shocks me that Dublin's greatest, that the greatest tourism spot in Dublin is a brewery. Like, it's quite amazing. And so this is an opportunity as well to advertise Ireland to the world again, and especially Donegal. Now, when I moved to Donegal in 2006, you wouldn't believe the amount of people said, I say, there's this beach outside Dunfanaghy. And everyone goes, don't tell anyone.
I know.
And now I think that attitude has changed, where you do want people to come to Donegal and see it.
Oh, I don't know. We got an awful lot of hassle when we started talking about where the secret waterfall was.
Yeah, you should. Well, it won't be secret anymore,
Greg.
But you see, what I do is I do start the show with a tour by a guy called Ken Dodds, and he's a Protestant taxi driver. He's based on a taxi driver I met who said, I've never been south.
No.
And this is about 20 years ago. And I said, well, where do you go on your holidays? And he says, I go to Spain. And I said, what, to avoid Catholics? So the whole point was, he finally gets the Enterprise down to Dublin and finds out how British the South is and how I call it Royal Dublin. Everyone's called the Royal College of Surgeons and the Royal Automobile Club and Royal Irish Academy, the RIA, of which Gerry Adams has also never been a member. And so it's that kind of thing. And I take him through the tour. But then I also take Southern people through the tour of the North to show how amazingly Celtic and Irish and ancient and archaeological, and it's the seat of St. Patrick and all of these things that nobody knows about. And what I love is, you know, we're going to be like a mixed marriage, you know, a bit like Wolfe Tone's parents, a bit like Patrick Pearse's parents. We'll be a mixed marriage between the North and the South. And we get to discover new things about each other that we never knew. And that kind of process of discovery is going to be an awful lot of fun. You know what I mean? So the whole thing should be a lot of fun and looked on positively, you know, because I actually
feel quite excited and enthused about the prospect during this conversation.
Yeah,
because it's not really, and it's not really talked about much.
No, and I think people haven't talked about it because they don't want to stoke certain fires. Mm. And I'm saying there's not a fire to be stoked. That's an old fire that's died out. What I'm experiencing in the North is a bunch of people, especially kind of Alliance voters, middle class Protestants, going, you know something, I think we could do this thing together, and the Southern economy is great, and they seem to have their, you know, what's together, and it's not Rome rule anymore, and Brexit has really disappointed us. And the fact that we have to beg every time for money for Casement Park or money for this or money for that, when we could represent ourselves. Remember that when unionists become part of this place, they'll form 15% of the electorate. So they'll always form a government. They'll always have the centre of power.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when Theresa May's government only had they had the unionists in to make up the numbers.
Oh, 15 of them.
But they represent 1%. They represent 1% of Britain. They've no real power. And getting the odd billion off them wasn't enough.
Yeah.
You could have a real stake and real power here.
Mm.
And that's something for anyone to...
Even in Donegal now, you know, members of the Protestant community or members of the Orange Order feel underrepresented, sort of hidden, you know. So I think if we were to get that right, and if there's other cultures and religions that would have to be accommodated, don't get me wrong, but if we were to get that right on a national scale, you'd like to see us sort of start getting it right now, if you know what I mean. Because
yes,
I know through doing programs like this and speaking to people and what have you, that people feel that this sort of, it's not a secret life is what or what have you, but it's, it's not out there, you know what I mean? And I suppose we'd have to get that right on a all-island basis.
Well, absolutely. Well, I call it the Dunfanaghy ethos, which is that Dunfanaghy is a marvellous town, obviously from a quite a huge Protestant ethos. It's a beautiful town. There was a great thing where they got together and, you know, like a lot of Donegal towns with a lot of empty spaces and empty shops. And a few people got together and said, look, let's fill every place here and turn it into kind of an ideal place.
Yeah.
And it worked. Mm-hmm. And so Dunfanaghy now is a very different thing than the sleepy place I knew. And that comes from that ethos. And I basically like things like the tidy towns in Ireland. I want to turn all of Ireland into a tidy town. I want to turn all of Ireland into Dunfanaghy or Dalkey and make the place nice for everybody. And I think that we can help each other do that. Whatever those kind of elements that have come out in communities. It was pointed out in Derry Girls, the difference between people, but I see nothing wrong with putting a toaster in a cupboard. And I like tray bakes. And in fact, the more tray bakes, the better.
Who's more inclined to put a toaster in a cupboard?
They say Protestants are, but I've never experienced it in my life. I've never seen any of them do it. And I just think that that's just that old rubbish that people come out with. But it was good fun. But what I'm finding is we have way more in common.
Of course we do.
You know, and in fact, you know, if you want to look at representation, it was funny. The Free State did make an effort, you know, before it did become completely subsumed by the church. You know, our first president, Douglas Hyde, was a Protestant. Right. We had Protestant ministers of state from Ivan Yates to Heather Humphreys. Our biggest newscaster for 30 years was Brian Dobson. You know, like, but the funny thing is, because people feel comfortable in the South not talking about the religion, nobody would actually know automatically that Brian Dobson was a Protestant.
No, of course not.
And I went to a mixed school, and this is where I get my ethos from. I went to the school where U2 went, Mount Temple. And of course, U2 are, you know, two Protestants, a Presbyterian and a Catholic. They're literally the United Irishmen of bands. So, but nobody thinks about that because we've gone beyond it. And this is where I'm trying to get us,
I get where you're coming from.
If I look at instances around the world, especially the big one at the moment, they're at 1641. They really are. Mm. We're at 1998, but we're beyond that now. We're 25 years ahead. And we have a major opportunity now to build something really great, really phenomenal. And I just find the negativity around when people bring out, oh, it'll cost this much. Like, you know, I don't think Michael Collins or any of them would turn around and go, oh, Jesus, this is going to cost an awful lot. I think we better not do it. Mm-hmm. Like, the point is you set a goal and you go, let's really make this work. And I think everybody can get together. And like I say, if we approach it like a mature country, like Switzerland or something like that, we can be that in about 10 years very quickly. We have to get rid of one thing though, Greg.
What's that?
NIMBYism. We have to stop. We have to stop things from progressing.
We do have, but that's a big problem here in Donegal as well as anywhere else. Yeah.
We have to kind of realise that there's a common good. Mm. You know, not that we just build things willy-nilly.
Is that steeped in our history, though, the development of sort of NIMBYism and the fear of things being taken off us or people encroaching in on us? Or
particularly with the Irish, I think, but the fact that we didn't own anything for 800 years, and then all of a sudden you get a patch of land and that's all that matters.
Yeah.
And we just have to start getting together and going, look, I mean, because communities are brilliant in Ireland. They really are. And neighbours get on great and people help each other out. But we just, in terms of general development, you know, where I live in Galway, it's like the houses are quite rich and well off and stuff, but there's no footpaths or streetlights. So, you know, you're kind of taking your life into your hands walking down the road. So it's these things that I think we need to get together and just get back on a Mehel community basis. And that involves all the communities on the island getting together and talking like that. But we can only do that through this amazing united concept. You know what I mean? And that's why I want to bring, I've got 300 images in the show. You'll be blown away by the AI stuff. The music is good. I've got a brand new anthem you're going to love called Oh Hibernia. You know, don't get offended. You will like it. And then, you know, I bring us right through to the point of where we're so solid as a country, we can start invading other countries, Greg.
Wow.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And forming a Pax Hibernia.
Oh, lovely.
But it's a peaceful invasion. We invade through Guinness and good spirits.
What Tatos, though? Do we take
of course, it's the blue and red Tatos. Right, but I mean, again, negotiations are going to be most severe on those.
Okay, listen. So, I mean, It's going to be a great show. I haven't seen it, but I'm really intrigued by it. Yeah. I can't believe it's not Ireland. It's in the Bala Arts Centre, Bala Buffet. It's funny. Yeah. As your stuff always is, unless you've come really dropped off a cliff recently. I presume it's funny.
It's okay. Funny.
It's funny.
I promise you, you will laugh and more everything. Than you laughed in this interview. I got a bit hippie here with Greg, but Greg brings out the serious in you guys.
Were we supposed to do a funny interview? Sorry, I didn't realize. I found it quite entertaining.
No, I absolutely. But you're a very deep philosophical thinker, Greg. Okay. So you bring that out in me.
Right.
You know what I mean? I won't be that philosophical.
More fun than what effectively Paddy is saying. It's more entertaining than Gregory's interview might suggest. I'm only kidding.
No, it's because you'll see in the show it's well written and it's well laid out with a lot of jokes. It's breaking up the stuff, and it's and we end with a song called "I'm So High" and you will walk out in a high, which I'm really excited about.
That's the voice of Paddy Cullivan. His show is "I Can't Believe It's Not Ireland." It's in the beautiful Balor Art Centre, Balor Buffet. It's on the 18th of July. So if you want to get your tickets, you know what we do here, lastminute.com. Don't be one of those. Get your tickets nice and early. Call the box office. Well, it's already kind of late, but call the box office at the Balor Art Centre and they will sort you out.
Or go to paddycullivan.com and the link is there.
Yeah, all right.
And of course, and to all my other shows. Because I'm always be selling, Greg. You know?
Yeah, of course you have to. But yeah. Things are better. But for live performers like yourself, it was tough for a while. Things are in a better position now, are they?
Yeah, although, you know, Taylor Swift and Bruce Springsteen need to lay off for
back
a while.
Off,
yeah. They need to back off a bit so that the artists like us can make a bit of money.
But, you know, I'm not going to drag you into another serious conversation, but it is, you know, the people in the festival sector are struggling as well.
They're charging so much.
Yeah.
Some of these individual artists are charging so much that people will go, well, I'll go to one gig this three months.
Exactly. That's my holiday almost.
And that's it. And
by the time you book accommodation in Dublin.
Yeah, so I always say support your local theatre, support the Balor, because the Balor is an incredible thing to have. You know what I mean? And it's a wonderfully run by Connor. And I just think, you know, go to as many events in there as you can. Taylor will survive without you.
Mm.
You can watch her on your HD TV, but, you know, support your local artists as much as you want to support Bruce.
And if you're going to go to one show this year, I can't believe
it's not Ireland, because it will blow you away.
On the 18th of July, and it is great fun and always entertaining. Paddy, thank you so very much indeed.
Thank you, Greg.
Back with more shortly. Okay, now we're joined on the programme by David Burke. David Burke, wrote a book, An Enemy of the Crown, which you may have read and might have been interested in the Donegal connections within that. He's also the author of his new book, The Puppet Masters, How MI6 Masterminded Ireland's Deep State Crisis. David, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks a million for having me on, Greg.
It's great to have you on. And we've kind of been talking about history on this show by accident rather than design. And we've been leaping from, you know, to the 18th century up to this century and back. And we're going back a little bit. It's contemporary history, this. But, you know, a lot to learn for people who aren't familiar with it.
Yes, I was enjoying listening to your last interview with Paddy. And I was beginning to think to myself what I was going to say was very modern in parts compared to it. The book I've just published, it's about the only spy in the Guards that was working for the British Secret Service and was caught. I'm certainly not saying he was the only spy in the Guards, but he was the only one who was caught. And I'll come to it in a minute if you like, but there's a very big Donegal angle to the book via Neil Blaney. But maybe I'll just say, first of all, just a little bit about the spy. His name was Patrick Crinion, and he was born in Dublin, but he was brought up in Wicklow. And the background, I think, is very important. His mother was a housemaid up in Paris Court, you know, that magnificent, beautiful house with the waterfall. And at the time, it had kind of gone into a bit of a decay. But the Paris Courts were really, really good employers, and they really looked after their staff well. And they had a row of cottages in Bray on a place called the Boggall Road. And the Crinions were allowed to occupy one of those. So from his early age, you can see that Patrick Crinion was not being brought up in a Republican background, unlike others. At the same time, Seamus Costello, who went on to eventually form the INLA, he grew up in the same town, but he came from a Republican background. Crinion was very bright. He did very well at school. He got into the Guards and they quickly recognised his intelligence. He was a member of Mensa. And because he had all of this all of these skills, and his memory was brilliant. He dealt with files fantastically. He was first of all brought into the special branch and then brought into an even more important unit that's not really written about, not known about much, called C3. And that was the nerve centre of Garda Intelligence. Now, it was hugely, hugely, hugely important because...
What kind of work would C3 be dealing with? What, you know, when we talk about this, I mean, a lot of people will never have heard of C3 before. What kind of stuff, matters of national interest, would they be occupied with?
Everything. They took in every single report you see from the special branch and other interested bodies. They put reports together and then they furnished them to the government. So in other words, if you're in the British Secret Service, if you had a man in C3, you had access to every single security and intelligence file. And that's where Crinion came in, and that's where Crinion was so important. But he wasn't the only spy in C3. He went into C3 as a young enough man in his late 20s, and he was mentored by a guy called Thomas Mullen. And Mullen was the man who recruited him to work for the British Secret Service. And his attitude was, well, look, there has to be someone in here to pass the information on to Britain. And, you know, you can imagine the atmosphere in the branch and in C3. Their enemy was the IRA, Republicans generally, and MI6 had the same enemy. So you can well imagine how links had been made. Mullen's role in this was discovered, but it was covered up. But Crinion was put on trial and convicted along with his MI6 handler, a guy called John Wyman. Now, Wyman was a former soldier, Marine, well-built guy, physically fit, in his 30s, was floating around Ireland for about 10 years, head of the Irish network. And when they caught him, when the branch eventually caught him, they thought, first of all, he was a subversive, and then all hell broke loose. But will I take you back to the Donegal angle?
I'm just, whatever you want to talk about. I'm so fascinated. I'm sitting here forgetting I'm supposedly doing an interview. Yes, but before you do, someone like that be? Would the MI6 have had difficulty in recruiting someone like that? I presume, you know, your money sport speaks all languages, but then again, there's a loyalty, and I presume in the book too, you're going to tease out whether or not, you know, he was an Irish patriot or a traitor to the country. I'm asking five questions at once, but anyway, we'll focus on like would someone like Crinion have been hard to recruit, and would it just been money, or would he have been sold a way of thinking? He was working for the better good or something. I don't know. We'll find out in the book. But
oh, I think it was a mixture of first of all, kind of a deferential tugging the forelock to the aristocracy is the first thing. Anti-republican atmosphere inside the guards. His mentor was a British agent, but Mullen wasn't the only British agent in C3. C3 had been set up after the Second World War, and British intelligence had got a man in there before Mullen. So it was Mr. X. I've never been able to find out who he was. Mullen, Crinion. And if Crinion hadn't been found out, it would have gone on and on and on. And the technique they used, I'll come back to motives in a moment, but they always had somebody there, not the boss, not the chief. Crinion was there, and there were seven chief superintendents in charge of the section. And they would last a year, a year and a half. Most of them, by the way, became Garda commissioners later on. Mm-hmm. So this was a great tactic for British intelligence. Keep one of the low, mid-ranking level guys, because there were only 11 people in this section, and they all had access to all of the files.
Wow.
And Crinion rose up within it. And I suppose it would have been a disaster for British intelligence if he'd been promoted out of it. As to his motives, I don't think it was money. He did get money from them, I'm convinced. When all of his colleagues were cycling around Dublin, he had a car. He was able to buy a house. So I do believe he got money. They found sterling in his house as well when they eventually arrested and raided him. But I don't think that was his motive. He had a massive ego. In some of his letters that I've managed to get my hands on, he describes himself as, and I'm quoting him now, not just brilliant, but exceptional. So
Caroline's looking at me as if to say, is that you? No, I'm only joking. Right, so everyone listening, I presume, is familiar with the Neil Blaney story. And Crinion, the theory is, and you make this argument, and based on good information, He's really pivotal in all of this. So without giving too much away from the book, of course, what can you tell us about that?
Well, this is in the first section of the book, so I don't mind giving it away. The arms crisis can be a very confusing matter. Let's put all the confusing part of it aside. What happened? Who did what? Who knew what? Let's park all of that. What happened was guns were coming in, and for reasons X, Y, or Z, the then Taoiseach, Jack Lynch, had it all covered up, sealed. Was not going to reach the public. And then, in the middle of the night, a mysterious character, who we haven't known his name for 50 years, sneaked up the laneway leading up to Liam Cosgrave's house. Cosgrave was the leader of the opposition, soon, by the way, to become he became Taoiseach in 73, and posted an incendiary note through Cosgrave's letterbox, signed simply Garda. And it gave details, about 90% of which were correct, but about 10% which were erroneous, which gave me great clues as to where the note might have come from. But in the correspondence I obtained, Crinion actually writes a letter and says that he precipitated the arms crisis. Now, there were only a few people very high up in the branch who knew exactly what was going on. And in C3, they knew they weren't involved in the investigation. That was taking place down in Dublin Castle, not in Phoenix Park. And a combination of the style of the note, the use of block capital letters to emphasise points, and a whole lot of other stuff I go into in great detail, I am absolutely convinced that when Crinion said, "I precipitated the arms crisis," he was admitting to being the Cosgrave's midnight postman. And we all know what happened next. There was chaos, and that giant of Donegal politics, a man who might otherwise have become leader of Fianna Fáil and Taoiseach, and I think he probably would have, was now out of government and eventually out of Fianna Fáil. He had his independent Fianna Fáil. He continued to be an elected representative. But he was gone. And all of that's dealt with in the Puppet Masters, the new book. But in my earlier book, you very kindly mentioned there as well.
The Enemy of the Crown.
I referred to smear campaign. I have a whole chapter about Blaney. And I'm convinced that unless there was another very senior spy like Crinion, that Crinion was part of this plot. WikiLeaks a few years ago released certain cables and files between the American embassy in Dublin and Washington. And one of them was all about Blaney. Now, Greg, they described Blaney, the CIA. Well, Virgil Randolph III was the fella's name. He was allegedly a political officer. I think he was probably CIA. He described Blaney as an unreconstructed Donegal man. I don't know what an unreconstructed Donegal man is, but he then proceeded to attack him and to claim that not only was there the provisional IRA and the official IRA, but that Neil Blaney had set up his own IRA with about 100 men. Now, this is absolute nonsense. But the American was relying on a source in the Irish government, what he described in the telex to Washington as an authoritative source in the Irish government. And I think that was a senior police officer. And I think what MI6 did was they wheeled Crinion down to a meeting in Ball's Bridge with this not too bright Virgil Randolph, the third guy, and consequently these emails are whizzing across. And the whole idea was to bring Blaney into disrepute because they didn't want him rehabilitated. They did not want him back in Fianna Fáil becoming leader or Taoiseach even.
Right, it's fascinating stuff. And we talked about the history of this. Crinion, Patrick Crinion, you'll find out what happened to him after the fact. And the fact that really he was around until very recently actually as well. I mean, the book, how do you describe? I'm not a huge reader, so I'm not fantastic at defining which way a book is written, but flicking through this, and I read about one book a year, and this is definitely on the list. It is a story, right? It is obviously factual, but you can read it as a novel, is it? How do you describe it? Best frame it yourself, David.
Oh, my God, you've hit on something no one else who's interviewed me has hit on. I decided when I wrote this book, there's no point in writing a book if it's just going to be on a shelf and it's going to be boring. So I wouldn't have the talent in a million years to write a novel, but I decided to try and make it as compelling. And if you like, it's perfectly straightforward, as it's straight fact, but I tried to, as best I could, make it like a novel, set a pace, real short, snappy chapters. Some one or two of the chapters are only a page or two. I think the longest chapter might be 7 or 8 pages. I wanted it to be readable. I wanted it to be take each chapter is short, but there's a point to be made, and then it links into the next one and move on. So that you've spotted the ambition and the technique I used.
It's an accidentally on purpose, maybe a novel, possibly not. Let's see what people think, and we'll see what we'll do with the next one. Okay, well, the book is The Puppet Masters, How MI6 Masterminded Ireland's Deep State Crisis. I think, you know, if you've no interest in history, as I say, I've only been flicking through a few chapters. If you like a good story, that's what it is as well, and that's where the world novel kind of come from. So I stumbled upon that one. David, listen, thank you very much for your time. Thanks for being so accommodating, and best of luck with everything.
Not at all. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
That's very good to hear. Thank you. Positive feedback. David Burke there. 086. See, I'm not that bad. You know, I'm all right. You're doing not too bad. Seriously, you won't hear that in Ryan Tubridy's podcast about books and stuff. They're going to write a book, The World's Best Bluffer, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, listen, 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 07 491 25,000. Tomorrow is Friday panel day. We've got a great panel in. We're going to discuss some of the topics of the day. What do you want us to talk about? Text in 086 60 25,000. Give us a call on 07 491 25,000. We've an interview too with the Taoiseach. That's still on, Caroline. So we're going to speak to the Taoiseach. I want to get his reaction to the AG's comments, the AG of the Times comments to government. And maybe he'll say they weren't taken on board. It's just advice. But I want to get some word from Simon Harris in relation to that. But of course, we'll get some reaction to the appointment of Nikki Bradley to the Senate as well. And I'm sure he'll want to also... talk of what Fine Gael's doing for the North West, which is fine too. As long as we get to ask questions, there's no harm talking about what the government is doing as well. But that's tomorrow. Nikki's on the show as well tomorrow. We'll find out what her aspirations are. As I said, Mike, I think she'd do really well with a couple of years in the Senate. Not that this is unsolicited advice. If it were me, why, you know, you're in a position of influence and power and have a platform, why would you go into the murky world of elective politics just yet? But anyway, we'll see what Nikki has planned. But before all of that, after 12, John Breslin is around the Northwest. He's coming live from the BNS Credit Union, Ballybofey and Snorlax Credit Union, for their second members' car draw of 2024. One lucky BNS Credit Union member is going to drive away in a brand new Toyota Yaris Hybrid Luna. There's also a €12,000 available in cash prizes to be given away today. So tune in for that. That's going to be good fun. That's around the Northwest. John Breslin live from BNS Credit Union. Right, we're going to take a quick break, back with the weather. Then lots of out and about stuff from Highland Radio. As we mentioned, John's coming live from BNS Credit Union after 12. Oisín Kelly and the crew are down in Glenties. It's as the build up to the big semi-final Donegal versus Galway continues. He's got a load of great guests to preview that game. As I say, we're all getting very excited. I think David James is out tomorrow afternoon as well. Jive time at the Carrigart Hotel, a fantastic new development in Carrigart. He's going to be there celebrating and highlighting the development, presumably, but also, of course, a festival that's ongoing at the moment. So it's all very exciting across the Northwest. Great uplifting conversation, Greg. Roll on a united Ireland. Goodbye, tricolour. Worth it. Great times ahead. That's in response to our chat with Paddy, who is infectious. And his show's really good, by the way. I took him all over the place and probably a little bit too deep. His show's fun. So get along to that if you can. Fascinating conversation today to challenge our latent common narratives. Perhaps with practice, we could apply this to our global outlook. And kings are the only cheese and onion worth their salt. You wouldn't put salt and cheese in your onion, would you? Kings. That's controversial. That is controversial. But kings are nice too. Yeah. Hi, Greg. It was refreshing to hear your guest speaking about the history of the 12th and his tours. It is sad that a significant element used the 12th in its bonfires, and the 11th really, to promote sectarianism and hate as tradition. The reality is that King William was acting on behalf of and was funded for the battle by the Pope. Also, the Union Jack flag, which they claim represents them, was created by King James, the person they're celebrating defeating. It is a combination of the St. George Cross and the St. Andrew's Cross, representing the union between England and Scotland. The Irish tricolour, regularly burned on 12th bonfires, is the only flag that actually recognises the orange section of our island. Green for nationalists, orange for unionists, and white representing the aspiration of peace between two groups. I agree that there should be history lessons on this in schools, north and south, and possibly a documentary to be broadcast in the lead up to the marching season. It may educate the population about the facts and play an important role in eliminating sectarian triumphalism, which I have very little time for, it has to be said. Last night, the green, white and orange, the orange represented for many football fans Holland, but England through to take on Spain. Will there be a lot of Spanish supporters out there on Sunday? It's a big day of sport, isn't it? Donegal, Galway, there's other stuff on as well. And then, of course, in the evening, the Euro finals. Any chance you can get the speed limit flashing sign switched off when schools are closed for the summer, especially the ones at Maharabeg on the main Derry Letterkenny Road, causing traffic to break suddenly for no reason? Thanks. For many, many years, and I left it this year, I have been appealing for them to be switched off when school isn't on, because I'll tell you why. In the ones I pass would have primarily been, say, the one at Lurgy Brack. I'm not sure if it's on or off. I haven't been up that road for a bit. But it's like the boy who cried wolf. What happens is we get the whole summer being conditioned that these lights mean nothing because there's no school on, and we know there's no school on. And then when it comes back to the time when children are going back to school, everyone's disregarding them because it's the boy that cried wolf. So I would back you up 100%. Hi, Greg. Isn't the Polestar roundabout great? I presume the tongue's bogged into the cheek there. 25 minutes to get from the Silver Tassie to Arena 7 yesterday at 3:30 p.m. with no schools or anything. What's going on? I've noticed that as well, that the traffic in Letterkenny hasn't really eased a lot of the time. In fact, in some cases, it seems to have gotten worse, even with schools off. And coming in from the Silver Tassie in the Remelton Road, it's a real pain in the body. Could someone explain why England are in the Euros when England are not a European country now? Good luck to them in the finals. Well, Europe's a continent. It's not sort of a political ideation. So they're from the European continent and therefore take part in the European finals. Russia's usually in there as well. It's not set in stone. Okay, we have to bid you adieu. That's where we leave it on the 9 till noon show for today. We'll be back, of course, tomorrow morning at 9 with our Friday panel. And we actually, by the way, we're giving That's Entertainment a break because we have another hour. We're going to team up with our friends at Galway Bay FM looking forward to Sunday. That's going to be fun. So please tune in tomorrow. It's going to be a fun show. And we'll talk about the serious stuff as well where need be. But we'll leave you there. Stay tuned. As I say, it's BNS Credit Union next with John Breslin.